Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Welcome to the Freedom Report. First, a message from our sponsors. The Libertarian Republic is brought to you in part by Amagi Metals. Amagi Metals is TLR's trusted metals dealer, and their mission is to help simplify the buying process of metals while illuminating the importance of financial responsibility and sound money. So, if you've been thinking about getting into metals, go to AmagiMetals.com and check them out. That's AmagiMetals.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Today is Thursday, April the 17th, and I am your host, Austin Peterson, and Ian Hewitt, my co-host, who's usually here to go back and forth with, is actually out today, so you're going to have to just deal with me. But a lot of shows just have one guy talking for hours and hours, so hopefully I'll be able to keep you entertained for the next 20 minutes. Before we get started, though, I do want to ask you a favor. If you're a fan of our podcast, do me a favor and subscribe to us on iTunes. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to us so you can get our episodes every single day. And if you don't have an iPhone, you can use your Android to download the app called Stitcher, and you can actually get us from the Stitcher app so that you don't miss an episode. Also, if you really enjoy our show and you've been listening to us for a while, please go to thelibertarianrepublic.com and send us your email. And this month we're actually having a promotion, so if you send us your email this month, then you'll be entered to win a replica of George Washington's flintlock pistol, which is a really cool, beautiful replica of our first president's gun. And today we're going to be talking about a topic that I think is probably going to make me 0.0 friends and maybe 100 enemies, but it's the type of topic that's just divisive, and I wanted to talk about it today, and I'm sorry that Ian's not here to go back and forth on this because I always love his insight. But it's the type of thing that it causes a big divide, because obviously this is the kind of thing that a war was fought over here in the United States, the American Civil War. And I want to talk about a story that happened in South Huntington, New York, which is kind of unusual that it would happen in New York. But two students have been suspended for allegedly bringing a Confederate flag to school. Brother Gary Cregan, who was a principal of St. Anthony's High School in South Huntington, said that two seniors walked in with a Confederate flag draped around their shoulders during an after-hours sporting event at the school. So apparently this has caused humongous amounts of outrage and disgust on Long Island. Quote, this is Cregan, who says that the African-American students who immediately saw it really exercised heroic restraint. And fortunately, a teacher immediately confiscated the flag and took the students out of the gym, Cregan said. The students were initially suspended for 10 days, but Cregan decided Tuesday they won't be allowed back. And he wrote a letter to the parents saying that the use of any symbols, quote, designed to revive past injustices or to inflame discrimination or racial intolerance is completely unacceptable and profoundly offensive. Now, he says that most people see the flag as a symbol of hate, and goes on to say, I find it just very hard to imagine why any student in 2014 would even consider or think that a Confederate flag would be anything other than a symbol of hate. And they interviewed an African-American about this, who she said, it represents slavery to us. It represents racism and prejudice to us. Believe me, I'm all for freedom of speech, but to have someone come into school with that flag draped around their shoulder, I'm really not sure what their intent was. Now, the New York Civil Liberties Union came out in defense of the people who have the right to express their free views. The NYCLU is what they're called, the Civil Liberties Union. Director Donna Lieberman says that helping children understand the impact of this patently offensive expressive activity is important. So apparently, there are some people in the area who are supporting the teen's right to free speech. Now, I couldn't find much more details on this case. It appears that the boys are suspended indefinitely for now. And, of course, the school does have a right to, you know, choose who goes there. I looked it up, and it does appear to be a private school, St. Anthony's High School. And so, you know, obviously they have a right to control what goes on in their grounds. But the issue here is that it's the Civil War, I think. We're going to get talk about the Civil War and slavery and that stuff in just a moment. But I want to talk about the issue of free speech first, because obviously people should have the right to have free speech. And if a kid wants to wear a Nazi swastika on his shirt, you know, that's obviously supposed to be inflammatory and provocative. I don't think schools would allow that. But the issue is here is that were these students trying to provoke some sort of a racist vibe? Were they trying to be racist? Well, the difference between, I think, the rebel flag and the Nazi flag is that the Nazis were so totally tied with anti-Semitism and, you know, burning of Jews, that I think there's no way that you can extract that. Now, the rebel flag, it's a little different, and let me explain to you why. The difference is because the commonly known rebel flag, as we know it, is actually a lesser-known battle flag that was used by Confederate soldiers. Now, the thing with that battle flag is it was not the official flag of the Confederacy. There were actually three separate official flags of the Confederacy that they changed through as they went through the period of the Civil War, which, you know, they really only lasted 5 years. So the battle flag, most people are ignorant about what the Confederate flag actually stands for. The battle flag, as we know it, the stars and bars, was not really the official flag of the Confederacy. So I think when people get offended, first of all, they should know about the history of the flag before they start to really spout off on it. And second of all, I think that there is truth to the idea that the Confederacy is inextricably tied to slavery, which, you know, if you're talking about great evils, I mean, slavery is definitely up there with the Holocaust. But there's so much facts and misinformation about the Confederacy and about slavery and about the causes of the Civil War that I think it's important that we talk about those things today. So I'm going to go through some of these things today. And first of all, I'm going to say that I think that obviously the kids, you know, are being idiots by bringing a Confederate flag into a, you know, the Confederate battle flag into school. And the school has the private property rights to do it. But, you know, at some point, you know, how offended are you going to be over stupid things like this? And then let's talk about the Civil War, because I want to discuss an issue that for some reason libertarians and the political world are still in a tizzy about, because my former boss, Judge Andrew Napolitano, actually just had a huge debate with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show about the root causes of the Civil War. And there was a lot of fact-checking that went on, and apparently the judge was incorrect about some of the statements that he made. Some of the things that he said were actually not true, judged by PolitiFact. And so we're going to talk about those things, and then we're going to talk about some of the ridiculous myths of the Civil War. The first claim that a lot of people say is that the Civil War, if you're a Confederate apologist, or let's just say you hate the federal government, so you're looking for an excuse to kind of poke them. The first thing that people say is that they say that the Civil War wasn't about slavery. They say that it was about tariffs, and it was about control, and it was about states' rights. Well, that's not really true. I mean, the Civil War obviously was caused by a number of factors, but the prevailing, overriding factor for the cause of the Civil War was slavery. I didn't always think that. I actually have changed my mind quite a bit on this as I've researched it more and more. But ladies and gentlemen, I try and stay objective about things. I have my biases. Obviously, I'm biased much more in favor of liberty, but I don't necessarily think that the Confederacy is any good example to point to as people who fight for their liberty, because that is not what the South was fighting for. When I was a little boy, my dad and grandpa used to take me to the battlefields growing up. We would take our history books, they'd bring history books, and we would walk the battlefields. We went to Gettysburg, we went to Vicksburg, went to Sharpsburg, you know, we went to the courthouse at Appomattox, and I have very fond memories growing up with my grandfather and my father, learning about the history of the Civil War. And when I was a little boy, I strongly identified with the Union. I strongly identified as Billy Yank, and I pictured myself wearing the Union blues and charging down Little Round Top, or charging down Big Round Top, and facing the with my awesome bayonet and taking on the rebels. But then when I got older, and I started to question the federal government, I started to identify with the rebels. And then I realized, as I got a little bit older than that, that both sides could go to hell. And the reason why I believe that is because both sides were fighting essentially for big government. And even though one side had the moral high ground, overall, it was still a statist government that won the war. Now, I want to talk about the reason why I believe that the Civil War was about slavery and not so much about tariffs, because I think that there's some facts that a lot of people don't, I don't want to call them libertarians, because I think they're really more conservative types, people who believe in states' rights. And libertarians don't believe in states' rights, because states don't have rights. States have powers. Only individuals have rights. If you call yourself a libertarian and you believe in states' rights, then you got to ask yourself really what it is you're defending. And the reason why is because it's really only important to care about individual rights. It's people that matter. And if you care about people, then you should care about the issue of slavery. And the reason why the Civil War was about slavery is because, and I'm going to read to you from this in just a moment, is because the reason that the Confederate States declared openly, the reason why they seceded, was to maintain the institution of chattel slavery. Now, I'm just going to read to you from one of the states' Articles of Secession, but if you go through all of the southern states and read their declarations of secession, you'll see that they say exactly why they do it, and overwhelmingly the reason is slavery. Now, this is from the declaration from Mississippi. And it starts, a declaration of the immediate causes which induce and justify the secession of the state of Mississippi from the federal union. In the momentous step which our state has taken of dissolving its connection with a government of which we so long formed a part, it is but just that we should declare the prominent reasons which we have induced our course. So they're saying this is why we're quitting the union. Our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery, the greatest material interest of the world. Its labor supplies the product, which constitutes by far the largest and most important portions of commerce of the earth. These products are peculiar to the climate verging on the tropical regions, and by an imperious law of nature, none but the black race can bear exposure to the tropical sun. These products have become necessities of the world, and a blow at slavery is a blow at commerce and civilization. That blow has long been long aimed at the institution, and was at the point of reaching its consummation. There was no choice left us but submission to the mandates of abolition, or a dissolution of the Union, whose principles had been subverted to work out our ruin. That we do not overstate the dangers to our institution, a reference to a few facts will sufficiently prove. The hostility of the institution commenced before the adoption of the Constitution, and was manifested in the well-known Ordinance of 1787 in regards to the Northwestern Territory. Now, I'm going to go ahead and stop my southern accent here so I can move on, but I want to just, let you know that it goes on to explain why slavery was so important to the southern states. And they are actually angry about the fact that the North is advocating for Negro equality socially and politically, and promotes insurrection and incendiarism in our midst. Well, the North doesn't really proclaim for Negro equality. That is actually another false claim. But again, this is the South. These are the Confederates. They're not going to tell the truth about their enemies either. The first casualty in any war is the truth. And if you read the Confederate articles of the Declaration of Secession, again, in Mississippi, it says, they were angry that they refused the admission of new slaves into the Union, slave states in the Union, and they kept trying to extinguish it by confining it within its present limits, denying the power of expanding expansion. Now, again, if you are a libertarian and you believe in individual rights, the South wanted to expand. They wanted to expand the institution of slavery, and that was their primary cause. And they thought that only blacks were able to work in the Southern climates, which is absolutely ridiculous, totally racist, and absolute BS. So, again, was slavery the primary reason that the Civil War was fought? Absolutely. Does that give the North the moral high ground? Well, barely. Only barely. And the reason why is, this is where it gets really interesting, people like to give Abraham Lincoln a lot of credit because of the Emancipation Proclamation, and they say, oh, well, the Emancipation Proclamation, well, he freed the slaves. It says emancipation. Right, right, right. Well, just like the Patriot Act says, you know, patriot in the title, that doesn't mean that it's patriotic. And the reason why the Emancipation Proclamation didn't free the slaves, it only freed some of them. And even, again, remember, the president is not a dictator, okay? He's not a tyrant. You cannot just create a law because you're the president. You're supposed to go have the Congress pass the law, both houses, and then the president signs the bill. But that's not what Abraham Lincoln did. This was the Emancipation Proclamation was a wartime measure, and it didn't free all the slaves. As a matter of fact, there were still about 1 million individuals who were still slaves after the Emancipation Proclamation. There were about 4 million slaves who were in captivity at the time, but it only declared about 3 million of them to be free. And the reason is because the Emancipation Proclamation only applied to states and territories that were, quote, in rebellion against the United States. So if you were a slave in Delaware, in Kentucky, or even the captured Confederate territories of New Orleans or Tennessee, sorry, but you are not going to be able to be free. So the Emancipation Proclamation did not actually free all of the slaves. And again, it's not supposed to free the slaves if you don't believe in a tyranny, because the president, again, is not supposed to be able to just write a law like in such a way, you know, unless you're a fan of Obama and you like executive orders. So, again, let's debunk the myth that the North was anti-racism. That's another BS myth, because the North was so racist, they were totally racist. And not only were they racist against blacks, they were racist against Irish, you know? They hated on white people almost as much or just as much as blacks. And so, there's a fantastic novel that you guys should read if you want to get a very politically incorrect history of the United States. There's a book by the name of The Renegade History of the United States, and it's by Thaddeus Russell. And he's actually formerly, I guess he's still kind of a liberal, but he's a college professor, history professor, who got fired because of his very politically incorrect viewpoints. And that's because, you know, a lot of times the truth isn't politically correct. So if you want to get a really good insight on how people in the North treated Irish, you should definitely check out Renegade History of the United States. It's all about how prostitutes, pirates, pimps, and blacks pioneered freedom in the United States. It's a great read, and you should definitely check that out. Now, yes, the North had a lot of abolitionists and there were a lot of progressives, but they also had racist laws that prevented free black people from getting their rights as citizens. And they had lots of lynch mobs. There were lynch mobs all the time. And it was actually the North that had the country's most violent race riot in history, because when the Civil War was going on, there was a huge protest against the draft policy, and it ended up with a lot of African Americans who got lynched and got, you know, killed, because the people in the North saw the African Americans as the reason why this war was going on and why they were having to send their sons off to die in this war, excuse me. And, you know, freed blacks were actually exempt from the draft. So you want to get white people pissed off at the time. I mean, you know, most of these people, you know, they didn't want to go fight this war. They didn't want to go fight it for blacks, and the freed blacks were exempt. And, you know, also there was a very corrupt policy by the North at the time where, you know, if you were getting drafted, you could pay $300 and you could buy your way out of the draft. So that was really a really ridiculous, you know, part of the Civil War, which a lot of people don't really know. And, you know, everybody likes to look at the North as if they were some, you know, high moral actor, but that's really just not the case. Also, there's a really big myth was that, you know, that the South, if the South had, you know, done some X, whatever you want to call it, then they could have won the war. Listen, there was never any chance that the South was going to win the war. I know a lot of people have these romantic ideas that General Lee was this brilliant general, that he, you know, if he hadn't, you know, if he hadn't sent Pickett, if Colonel Pickett hadn't sent his troops across the open field during Pickett's charge and gotten his 4,000 troops slaughtered, maybe they would have had a chance. If they had taken the high ground at Gettysburg, maybe they would have had a chance. No, the South never had a chance to win, and the reason why is twofold, really. It's about supplies and about men. The North had way more people. Number one, they had an enormous population. So there were 22 million people who lived in the North. There were 9 million people who lived in the South. That's just overall population. And a lot of the population of the South were counted. They were slaves. So think about this. So here's a comparison. In the Union states, the free population was 21.7 million. In the Confederate states, there were 5.6 million, okay? Now, they say that a Confederate, you know, one Confederate could kill, like, three Yankees, but that's still not going to get you over the top with this population. And also, the Union Army had 2.1 million soldiers. The Confederate Army, at their height, had maybe 1 million soldiers. Maybe. And really, they probably only had around 700,000 actual serviceable men. Now, the North, they manufactured 90% of the items that they used in the war. The Confederates, they only manufactured 10%. So when they got blockaded by the North and they could no longer import items they needed, they were screwed. So they were never going to have a chance. 97% of the firearms that the North used were produced in the North. For the Confederates, only 3%. So there's no way that the Confederates were ever going to get a chance to beat the Union. They just never had the manpower. They never had the supplies that they needed in order to fight a prolonged war against the North. There were a lot of romantic notions at the time that because of their heart, because of their passion and the Southerners' passion, that they were going to be able to beat the North. But that was just not the case. They were never going to beat them. Now, a lot of people think that it was the generals of the war, the great generals that really had, you know, were the ones who were going to be able to win the war. People give a lot of credit to General Robert E. Lee, and certainly he was a genius, but there were really stupid men who were leading this war on both sides. If you hadn't heard, some of you who are Civil War historians may have heard about General McClellan. And McClellan, who still has a statue out here at the Capitol in Washington, D.C. People don't like to talk about this, but he actually retreated. He deserted his troops three times on the battlefield. And that's the kind of stupidity that gets their men killed. So, you know, a lot of people like to, you know, they look at these statues of quote-unquote great men here in the Capitol of the United States, and they don't realize that a lot of these people were just blunderous idiots. And if you look at the South, there were a lot of idiots too. You know, like I said, it was George Pickett had 12,000 soldiers that he crossed into an open field, and they just absolutely were slaughtered. Getting his, you know, half of the men, I believe, were killed right there in the field. So there was a lot of stupidity on both sides. But again, I think the point of this is just that the South never ever had a chance. Now, one last thing before I take this off, because it looks like I'm going kind of long here. I love this topic, you know, and it's the kind of thing that I think that a lot of people are interested in, but it definitely gets people ticked off on both sides. But the Judge Napolitano debate with John Stewart is an issue that I think people really, you know, they didn't really look into, because we all love the judge and we all kind of hate liberal John Stewart, but it's more important to me that we get the facts straight. And when you look at the facts of the debate that went on, there were, it looks like, 4 points of contention here between Judge Napolitano and John Stewart. And I want to talk about these 4 points. I'll get through them pretty quick, and then we can, hopefully you guys can send me some emails and tell me what you think. And don't be just angry, just spouting off. I know everybody's got points to make, but, you know, send me some good evidence. If you've got something to contradict what I've said today, then send it my way. I want to have an informed debate about this stuff, because I love history. And if you're listening to this at this point, after I've blathered for 25 minutes by myself, you probably love history too. So talk to me about what you think about this. So here's these 4 points. The judge said that Abraham Lincoln, quote, tried to arm the slaves. One of this arguments was that Lincoln could have bought the slaves and freed them and saved thousands of lives and billions of dollars. John Stewart said that Lincoln didn't try to buy the slaves, but the states and Stewart did said that he did try and buy the slaves, but the states and slave owners weren't interested. And the truth is that Lincoln did put over $700,000 out on the table to liberate Delaware slaves. And like John Stewart said, the Delaware legislature said, no thanks. So Lincoln got Congress to approve a slave purchase bill, but there was never any indication that the slaveholders in any Union or Confederate states were ready to negotiate. And then soon after that, Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation. Also, one of the most important points that I think was made when John Stewart sort of bashed the judge was that the idea of buying up the slaves was to give in to the belief that you could own people. It would, if you were to say as a person, abolitionist of the North, well, let me buy these slaves. Well, you may think that you're being a humanitarian, but you're still giving in to the idea that you can purchase someone. And I think that that is actually morally abhorrent, because let me tell you something. If there was a group of people who were chained in a basement and there was an evil, you know, guy who kept them enslaved in his basement, do you think that I would go to him and negotiate and try and give him money? I don't negotiate with terrorists. If there were people in a basement who were enslaved in a basement and he was calling them his property, I would never give him money and then just let him walk. I would violently break into his house with an M16, and if he tried to stop me, I would shoot him, because those people are captured. Those are free people. Every human being in the world deserves to be free. And if they cannot be freed by negotiation, then it should be done by force. Because absolutely no one should be put under the boot of slavery. So the idea that you would even buy the slaves, I actually think is morally abhorrent. It may be politically expedient, but that doesn't make it morally right. And now the next claim is that President Lincoln enforced the Fugitive Slave Act until the Civil War ended. And that was rated as mostly false by PolitiFact. Apparently, they were too busy fighting a war to actually enforce the Fugitive Slave Act. Also, Judge Napolitano says that Lincoln tried to arm the slaves. Napolitano might not have wanted Lincoln to go to war to free the slaves, but he had no problem if the slaves rose up to free themselves. When Stewart pointed out how impossible that would be for slaves, Napolitano said Lincoln had tried to arm the slaves. And here's a quote from the judge. If the slaves had gone to war against their slave owners and I had been alive, I would have been with them. I would have helped finance, fund, and lead that revolt, Napolitano said. Are you not familiar with slavery? Stewart asked. I am very familiar with it, responded Napolitano. That is not the option, Stewart said. No, no, no. Lincoln tried to arm the slaves, Napolitano said. And then he went on. He did not give any proof. Also, here's the thing. What do you mean arm the slaves? Like, you can't, how are you going to finance and fund a rebellion? You know, that's exactly what John Brown did, and a lot of libertarians claim to hate John Brown as a terrorist. Now, if you think that John Brown is a terrorist, I'm going to tell you right now, you need to get on the libertarianrepublic.com, search out John Brown. We've got an excellent op-ed by my co-host Ian Hewitt, who wrote about John Brown and why his killings in Kansas were justified, because the people that he killed were slavers. These were people who were going out trying to return slaves to their masters. So I think that there's a lot of myths and lies about John Brown out there, and I think that you guys need to educate and inform yourself on this and not just buy the whole neo-Confederate claptrap on this issue. Because again, If you're a slave, if you're chained up in a basement, you don't have a way to rebel. You know, you're totally powerless. If you tried to rebel, you would be killed. Sometimes, you know, you have to have someone come and save you. And if you're not going to do it, if you're such a non-interventionist that you don't want to go and save somebody else, well, get the hell out of here, because I sure as hell don't want to be your neighbor and live with somebody that doesn't care enough to try and free slaves in our own country. You know, you may say, well, I don't want to be involved in freeing the slaves in Coney, you know, screw Coney, and I don't want to be involved in all that stuff. But ladies and gentlemen, when it's going on in your own country, you know, there comes a time when silence is betrayal. So I want to talk about the last two items, then we can move off. I've probably bored the hell out of a lot of these people who are listening. But the American slave trade caused at least 5 million deaths. That's what John Stewart's claim was, and it appears that that claim was false. The slave trade did not cause at least 5 million deaths, and the historians have thoroughly debunked that. There's no fully accurate tally of the death toll due to slavery. And this is the last claim on this list. Napolitano says that Lincoln enforced the Fugitive Slave Act, and that's just not true. Among the steps Napolitano said Lincoln could have taken before going to war would have been to stop sending escaped slaves back to their owners. To hear him tell it, Lincoln and other federal officials worked at this throughout the Civil War. If there was ever any use of federal power that is justified, would it not be to end the most horrific, abhorrent practice in the history of mankind? Stewart asked Napolitano. After it had tried everything else, Napolitano said, like abolishing the Fugitive Slave Act, which Lincoln enforced, and his judges enforced, and his federal marshals enforced until the Civil War was over and Lincoln was nearly dead. The Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 made it easier for slave owners to use the federal government to get back at the people who had escaped bondage. So while there were cases when Lincoln enforced the law during the Civil War, he did so selectively when he thought it would keep border states in the Union fold. When it came to slaves from Confederate states, the weight of government actions fell heavily on the side of refusing to return escaped slaves. At the least, Napolitano gets his dates wrong. Congress repealed the Fugitive Slave Act in 1864, a year before the war ended, and the PolitiFact rated this claim mostly false. So, you know, I want to know what you think about this, ladies and gentlemen. Obviously, everybody has strong opinions on this, but, and, you know, we've gone quite a long time to talk about this from the question of the rebel flag, but there aren't any easy answers to things like this in life. I think people like to pick sides because we like to think of one side as good and one side as evil, when in reality, both sides really had a lot of good and a lot of evil in them, perhaps. But if you had to choose which side had the moral high ground, well, it seems that the North had a slight advantage. I think that a lot of people who call themselves libertarians, they probably tend to look at the Confederacy as an example of a organized rebellion against what they see as an enormous government, statist power. But if you read the Articles of Secession, if you read the Constitution of the Confederate States, you will see a tyrannical government that was being formed. And if anything, if you're not a statist and you hate big government, you should hate the Confederacy. So I would urge you to read the Confederate Constitution, the Confederate States Constitution, because it is a big government document from beginning to end. And it legitimizes chattel slavery. So if anything, we're probably lucky here in the United States, if you hate, you know, the government, or if you hate states, that we didn't end up with, you know, another government on this continent. You know, one government is bad enough that we've got to fight and deal with. You know, can you imagine if we'd had two governments, or if we had to have several governments? Now, again, if you're a neo-Confederate, or if you're a conservative who identifies with the cause of the South, that would be very offensive to you. But I'm not a neo-Confederate. I don't care about states' rights. I don't believe in states' rights. States do not have rights. If you are a libertarian, I must say this again. I'm going to end with this. States don't have rights. Only people have rights. States have powers. Thank you very much for listening to the Freedom Report podcast, ladies and gentlemen. I hope that you will enjoy it, and please subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher. Hopefully Ian will be feeling better and be back tomorrow. We have a nice show with him. And please subscribe. Don't forget, go to thelibertarianrepublic.com every single day for your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.